Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Right now on Last Call, Model Eek, Ford out with a major update on EVs, and it's shocking. Start the clock. The race now on for China to divest TikTok, but how would that really happen? We'll hear from top tech investor Omid Malik. The fuel for a frenzy. New findings revealing one country's huge role in gold's wild run, showing his true stripe. Rare comments for the co-founder of the payments app, including its potential mega IPO. Sully's stats with the one country making investors the most money this year, and it is nowhere near the good old US of A. Plus, the Hunger Games coming for restaurant reservations. How scalpers are now making a fortune off of your favorite table and maybe leaving some diners out in the cold. All that and more over the hour. So belly up or buckle up, because Last Call is up right now. Breaking news two nights in a row. Good evening here. Good afternoon out west. I'm Brian Selva. We begin with the breaking news that is the Meta meltdown. Facebook crushed, right now losing more than $190 billion in market cap. That's like losing an entire Verizon or an entire American Express in value right now. Investors did not like the way the company reported weak revenue guidance. Higher expenses also weighing on the stock. Meta posted a $3.8 billion loss on its Reality Labs. That is their virtual reality business. But is the company about to pivot again? On the earnings call, Mark Zuckerberg mentioned Wall Street's two favorite letters, AI. He said the company will be shifting existing resources to focus more on artificial intelligence. But Zuckerberg warned investors it may take time for Meta to profit from AI.
Building the leading AI will also be a larger undertaking than the other experiences we've added to our apps, and this is likely going to take several years. On the upside, once our new AI services reach scale, we have a strong track record of monetizing them effectively.
Now, the negative Meta headlines are overshadowing a beat on revenue for the quarter. And let's not forget, Meta's had an amazing stock run the last year or so. But tonight's loss, dragging down the other Mag 7 stocks like Alphabet, Amazon, Microsoft, Nvidia, they're all down right now. Now, if these losses hold, tomorrow would be Meta's worst drop in nearly a year and a half. Let's get more on Meta and reaction and maybe a little on TikTok and bring in the partner and co-founder of Lightshed Partners. That is Rich Greenfield. I want to point out, Rich, that the Meta stock is up 300% in like a year and a half. So while it's down big now, it's had a heck of a run, but it is clear that some investors do appear worried about its spending. Are you?
Well, look, we got excited about Meta and put a buy on it about 15 months ago. So, you know, almost 300%, as you pointed out. Look, what's happening right now is, you know, they're looking at an investment cycle in AI that people don't know. First of all, it's a very competitive field, Brian. I mean, you had Anthropic and Perplexity on CNBC yesterday. Obviously, Microsoft and ChatGPT. Google's got Gemini. I mean, this is a very crowded space. There is no doubt that Meta is going to be a major player. I think the challenge for investors is, one, how big is this investment cycle given the level of competition? You know, there's certainly a very large investment cycle that's been tied to Reality Labs and their VR and, you know, the AR glasses with Ray-Ban that they're working on. Mm-hmm. But that was not nearly as competitive as this AI war that you just sort of talked about. And obviously Mark talked about on the call. And I think it's not so clear right now. Yes, AI is making your recommendations better, and AI is making the ads better, and the content on Facebook and Instagram is going to be better. But how you actually monetize an AI chatbot box and how that sort of the use case and the monetization isn't clear. It's really early days. Yeah. And I think you're just seeing some sort of steam let out of this story. I think investors are going to have to learn more and get a better understanding of how this plays out.
What worries me a little bit is that the company just made this giant pivot to the metaverse. I mean, they changed their name. The corporate name was Facebook. Now the corporate name is Meta. People were talking about, I'm buying up virtual land next to Snoop Dogg in the metaverse, right? I mean, this was the thing. Now we're just talking about, should they change their name to AI book?
It's funny. Look, the one thing I'll say, Brian, this is a lot more tangible. I mean, I think investors can understand, wrap their arms and understand how this can drive Meta's businesses over the long term. I think there's still very little investor buy-in on the metaverse and VR and headsets. I think that is still a very, very tough sell for investors. I think it's more of, hey, while they're doing that, now they're also doing this, and the stock is up 300%. And I think this is just people, look, they're still growing. They may still grow over 20% next quarter on top of a 10%+ comp a year ago. I mean, like, they are still growing at a very, very healthy clip. And yet comps get harder as the year goes on. But this is really, I think, just fear that they don't fully understand, and they weren't expecting Zuckerberg to make those comments. And look, you haven't seen Meta raise operating expense guidance really since early 21. So it's been a long time since they really took up expense guidance. And I think that just on a stock that's up a lot, it doesn't take a lot to spook people. The flip side is TikTok may get banned and you may end up seeing, you know, a real resurgence in time spent and users that nobody is accounting for today.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. I want to highlight something Meta did, which got no attention because it is kind of wonky, but I thought it was incredibly important, and I think it was very smart. Now, we know, Rich, I cover energy, right? So I know how much energy we're going to need to power all these data centers. Very quietly, a few months ago, Facebook added a guy named John Arnold to its board. John Arnold's not a household name. He was the youngest non-tech billionaire ever in America, and he made his money by trading natural gas and other energies. This guy knows energy like almost nobody. And I thought, what a really smart under-the-radar move, because Zuckerberg, while going after all these NVIDIA chips as well, I think is positioning the company to not only make sure they have the chips from NVIDIA, but maybe they have the power to actually pull this off.
Look, there, you know, I think Mark Zuckerberg is a one-of-a-kind executive. I mean, he's a fundamental, you know, killer business-wise. I mean, look what he's been able to achieve. He's made multiple pivots that no one thought was possible and proved everyone wrong at every step of the way. I mean, they disclosed today, Brian, 60% of time spent on Facebook and Instagram is video. 4 or 5 years ago, it was insignificant. Everyone was worried TikTok was going to kill them. They are now dominating, and actually, you know, you look at the strength that they have and how they've built Reels and succeeded, they've shocked even the folks inside of TikTok how well they've done. So, you know, when you have a truly one-of-a-kind CEO, you make really interesting moves like you just pointed out.
Yeah, and I don't know how Threads is doing. I don't hear much about it, but that's different. Very quickly, Rich, are you changing your buy rating?
Now, look, I think this is, I mean, look, my guess is we have to get a better understanding. I think this company is still positioned for very healthy growth. It's not expensive on an earnings basis. You know, when you look at it versus a wide array of stocks, this thing does not look expensive, especially after tonight's pullback. I think this is more of, we're going to have to get a better understanding, which we're not going to do in the next, you know, few hours. Mm-hmm. But we're going to have to get a better understanding of how the monetization story is going to play out relative to the investment. And this is a multi-year investment cycle. There's no doubt about it. He's clearly signaling that. But I think the wild card here, Brian, is we do believe TikTok is likely, if they don't win in court, and I don't think they're going to, they're likely to exit the U.S. or sell and not have their algorithm. So there is a very big outside catalyst in the next 12 months that I think you're going to want to stick around for if you're involved in Meta and or Snapchat right now.
150 million people kind of looking for a virtual social media home. We'll see. Rich Greenfield.
And a lot of advertising dollars,
Brian.
And a lot of advertising dollars.
That's right.
Tens of billions.
Yeah, TikTok, probably gone. We'll talk about that later on in the show. Rich, thank you. Well, Meta is not the only big tech stock that is down right now. Big Blue, a little smaller. The company posting its third revenue miss in the last five quarters. Now, IBM may be down because it also said it would buy a cloud software maker called HashiCorp, whoever that is, for $6.4 billion. But the earnings report itself, not all bad at all. Maybe the stock is down because the deal. I don't know. Maybe Christina Partsenevelis knows, which is why she's on this show right now to talk about IBM and what's going on.
Okay, you're asking why is it down? So the first, you had the revenue miss. There was some weakness in software. There was some weakness in consulting. Even the CFO, I caught up with him around 3:45 p.m. Eastern, and he said that there was, tightening with IT budgets, and they're seeing that from a lot of clients. Overall, though, they still say that they're stealing market share away from Accenture. So that's the positive. The other flip side, too, is this HashiCorp acquisition you talk about, and just shows how IBM, it's not a legacy tech company anymore. It's shifting towards this hybrid cloud management firm, and that's exactly what Hashi is providing to IBM. It's going to be $35 a share, enterprise value of $6.4 billion. Not their biggest acquisition, but a big acquisition as they start to capitalize on the software angle of generative AI models, all these complicated things for developers, hybrid cloud on your local computer. It gets really tough. So that's why they need companies like Hashi to help with that, as well as security tools. However, stock dropped dramatically, not for Hashi, for IBM. And there's concerns, how long is this going to take for synergies? Does IBM need Hashi? Because Red Hat, their previous acquisition back in 2018, is not doing so well. The CEO, Arvind Krishna, weighed in on that relationship on the earnings call. Listen in.
Hashi to us is an accelerant for IBM strategy and for software strategy. And Hashi helps in being offensive in terms of giving us an overall better portfolio, so even more clients want to do business with us.
So, Brian, there you have it. You got the HashiCorp that could be perceived as a positive maybe in the long term, but there's still some weakness in software consulting, the revenue miss you talked about, all contributing to the stock drop right now. And the futures market, too, with Meta's results, it's just a double whammy tonight.
Can we just acknowledge that audio of Arvind Krishna sounded like a radio recording from 1942? We shall fight in the grounds. We shall fight in the seas and oceans.
I
that's the only thing I could
like
take away from
sound
that.
Bites, but
it was like cue the phonograph.
Just take away from the fact that HashiCorp is their latest acquisition under the CEO. There's been over 40 plus acquisitions just since 2020. They're really trying to capitalize on that reoccurring source of revenue when it comes to signing up clients and getting them to use their software platforms, use their hybrid cloud management platforms. Even if you don't understand any of the definitions of these acquisitions, it's all about the reoccurring source of revenue, especially when the other facets of the business, like financing, infrastructure, even consulting, is taking some weakness now. And this will provide the bread and butter.
And like Meta, IBM has had a big run the last couple of years. You get a little money off the table. It's not completely out of line. Still, I stand by my statement. Martians are on the way. War of the Worlds. Christina Partsenevelis. Thank you.
We out.
Yeah, exactly. Shh. All right, let's take a look at what happened to your money today. It was a mixed market. Nothing happened, actually. The Dow fell slightly. The S&P and the NASDAQ rose slightly. Your stud and dud inside the market, Tesla, the stud, up 12%. We talked about it almost all night last night in the show. People like the numbers. As Dan Ives said, sort of the adult Elon Musk back in the room. The big decliner, Old Dominion Freight Lines, trucking company based in the Old Dominion, a.k.a. Virginia, down 11% on some disappointing guidance. Take a quick look at futures, down very, very fractionally. All right, on deck, are you sitting down? Because Ford just revealed how much money it is losing on every single electric car it is selling. And I'm just telling you, it's a big number. Plus, the clock is ticking, tick-tock. Now racing against the ban or a sale, top tech investor Omid Malik is here on what comes next and why maybe this is not a good idea.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
That says it's time for tomorrow's news tonight. Some of the headlines that you and Wall Street will be talking about in the morning. And yes, tonight it's all about earnings. All right, first up, a burrito boom. Chipotle seeing a boost in traffic as tacos fly off the line. Aside from some price hikes in California due to forced minimum wage increases, Chipotle does not anticipate more of those in the near future.
Our hope is we can continue to have great growth. And if we have, you know, more mild inflation that we're dealing with, then hopefully we can navigate without a price increase here in the near term.
Chipotle stock is higher right now. In fact, look at that. Chipotle is above $3,000 a share. It's up 375% in just 4 years. The bottom line, Tex-Mex has hopefully made you a lot of money. Next up, Ford. It beat expectations. Sales of big old trucks and hybrids are booming. But there's also some big losses still in the EV unit. Phil LeBeau joining us now live from a Ford dealership out west with more. Ford. Or Phil Ford. At Ford.
Hey, Brian, let's take a look at shares of Ford. And as you look at shares of Ford, moving a little higher after hours, as you mentioned, the company did beat the street. First quarter earning 49 cents a share, 7 cents better than expectations. But what's really interesting is when you break down the results by division, they continue to kill it when it comes to commercial vehicles. $3 billion profit. Internal combustion engine vehicles, the traditional F-150, not as much, but remember they had the launch of the F-150 in the first quarter. That's expected to ramp as the year goes on. And then you've got the EV business where they lost $1.3 billion. Here is CEO Jim Farley talking during the analyst call about the push to get to break even and to limit the losses in EVs.
We learned a lot when we, in our more expensive vehicles, Mach-E, when in February we dropped the price 17%, our volume went up 141%. That's telling us that the more affordable we can make great product, the more attractive it is to these mainstream EV adopters.
Well, Jim Farley is adamant they will eventually get it fixed when it comes to losing money on EVs. It ain't going to happen this year. They expect to lose between $5 and $5.5 billion. And yes, Ford, number three in terms of EV sales in the U.S., behind Tesla, which dominates. And then you see Hyundai, Kia, and then Ford coming in at third. Finally, take a look at shares of Ford versus GM and Stellantis. And the reason we're showing you the traditional big three, Brian, is because Ford says it does expect traditional vehicle prices, all vehicles, not just EVs, internal combustion, to be down 2 to 2.5% in terms of pricing this year. That hasn't happened yet, but that's the expectation within the auto industry.
Those EV losses of $5+ billion, if you just do the basic math, come out to about a loss of $130,000 per car. I want to repeat that. They come out to about a loss of $130,000 per car. I understand a lot of that is amortized in terms of manufacturing. All the other stuff, it's not
correct.
The actual car. Totally get that. This is long-term investment. So it's kind of it's a little bit, you know,
correct,
trying to make a point. But that's still a gigantic gap to fill, Phil.
Here's what they need. They need prices to stop falling as much as they are, and that's being driven by competition around the world. At the same time, they do believe they're making progress when it comes to cutting costs. That's also the key here. But at this point, making and building an EV here in the U.S. for the traditional automakers, separate from Tesla, it's still a money-losing venture. They believe that they can turn this around eventually, but it's going to take time, Brian.
Yeah, it's a big number. We'll see what they can do. Phil LeBeau, thank you very much. All right, for more, let's bring in RBC Capital Markets Global Autos analyst Tom Narayan. Tom, thanks for joining us. I mean, Ford, by all accounts, is doing great. I mean, they're making a lot of money on big trucks, commercial fleets, et cetera. Hybrid sales, I think, were up 40%. So that's all very much a positive. But then you've got this just gigantic $5 billion loss every year, by the way, every year, that is hanging out there. How, answer that question I asked to Phil. How do they fix that?
I don't know. I think it's going to be a challenge. And you heard from what Elon said yesterday on the Tesla call, right? They're going after a more affordable, cheaper car. Even GM, Mary Barra, were talking about the Equinox and how that EV is going to be priced lower and more attractive. So pricing seems to be going down, not up. And you heard on the Ford call as well, the CFO was saying, as long as EV pricing normalizes, then our losses should lessen. The issue here is pricing for EVs looks like it's only going to go lower. So, yeah, that's something that a lot of folks are still worried about, losing $100,000, I think, if you do the math on the Q1 numbers on per car on EVs. If pricing keeps coming down, it'll be tough to get there.
And, you know, as I've been, I think, one of the only ones out there being a little more critical, a little more rational about this. I've taken a lot of heat for it as well. People think I'm anti-EV. No, I'm pro-Detroit. I want to throw that out there again. I'm just pro-Detroit. When I see these numbers, Tom, and I see the lead that Tesla has, the cost-competitive lead that they have in BYD of China, just hanging over the Pacific Ocean, ready to come over here, come up through Mexico, right, and release these really inexpensive, because they can't compete on labor costs. And you just look at that and you wonder, I know Ford and GM have been under massive political pressure to go in one direction. But is there a time at which they simply say, maybe this is not the direction that we can ever competitively be in?
You know, we're in an EV slowdown now. So in some ways, it's benefiting some of the legacy folks, you know, really like GM and Stellantis, you called out before.
But this is when, Tom, this is when it's supposed to be ramping up. This is it. Federal tax credits made in the United States. Some states are basically banning gas-powered cars after 2035. The Detroit under massive political pressure at the very highest levels to go in one direction. And they're forced to eat these gigantic losses. And at some point, it could cost a lot of jobs.
Yeah, I mean, look, politically, folks, are we already seeing this happening in Europe where they're slowing the roll, if so to speak, on some of these regulations? So governments will, and even in the U.S., they'll come and understand, look, we can't, at the end of the day, bankrupt Detroit. So if that happens, they'll probably slow that development, and especially if consumers don't want the product. So you could see some loosening there. But make no mistake, we are moving towards an electric future. This is where we're headed. Electric cars are just simply better. But to your point, I do think governments, including the U.S., will be there to support the industry, support jobs, maybe slow that development such that it doesn't, you know, it's not so disastrous. I, at the end of the day, I do think D3 will survive. They will convert to being electric despite whatever challenges they may face.
Well, I think you just said it very well, which is the government will be there with, quote, support, which sounds a lot like taxpayer money. Tom Narayan, thank you very much. All right, still ahead. Can TikTok beat the clock? The fallout spreading from its looming ban or sale? Top tech investor Omid Malik, tell us who stands to gain and whether this is a good idea at all. What's next?
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
All right, welcome back. The clock now officially ticking for TikTok. President Biden signing the Ukraine and Israel funding package, which also seeks to force a sale of TikTok away from China. Now, if TikTok's parent company cannot find a new owner, its move and move its servers and data to the United States, TikTok is likely finished. Now, they have 270 days to do this, or until January 19th of next year. President Biden speaking on the signing of the bill earlier today, but making no mention of TikTok. Now, TikTok CEO Shou Chu speaking out and railing against the legislation.
It's obviously a disappointing moment, but it does not need to be a defining one. It's actually ironic because the freedom of expression on TikTok reflects the same American values that make the United States a beacon of freedom. Rest assured, we aren't going anywhere. We are confident and we will keep fighting for your rights in the courts. The facts and the Constitution are on our side.
TikTok, of course, has a massive audience in America, an estimated 150 million users. I mean, will TikTok actually get banned? And if so, what does it mean for social media at large? Joining us now, founder and CEO of Farvahar Partners and 1789 Capital, Omid Malik. Omid, good to see you again. You used to be very much for a TikTok ban. You wrote an op-ed about it in the year 2020. But now, I guess upon reading some of the intricacies, you're having second thoughts. Why?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I want to be very clear. I think I was doing this before it was popular. That op-ed was 4 years ago, and I made it very clear China does not engage in capitalism. They engage in mercantilism. And I have a whole host of issues with China and TikTok in particular. I've even come out of support for decoupling. They steal our IP. They make us have a local partner. There's effectively no reciprocity. And as you know, Brian, until very recently, they've been accessing our capital markets without having to have audited financials and serving up ADRs with no legal recourse for regular American shareholders. So it's a huge problem. And I really have an issue with what TikTok is doing to society. With all of that said, as you pointed out, I don't trust this bill that was passed. And I certainly don't trust the Biden administration to implement it fairly. And that's because, as you alluded to, I started to read the text of what was passed. And it is way too vague. I mean, one of the choice quotes is that if you are what they call subject to the direction of a foreign power, you can fall under this category. And just like we saw with the Patriot Act, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And so I'm highly concerned, as we've discussed in the past, about how the federal government has been circumventing and abridging our rights. And I'm very concerned about that language. Because as you also know, that same language is used against the former president of the United States for 3 years when they called him a Russian asset. Does that mean that Truth Social now should be banned as well? What does it mean for Rumble or X, a platform you know I'm a supporter of, if they don't like that? Could you use this bill against it also? So it's really with the implementation, not the spirit, that I'm against, because I am a China hawk. I think there's a better way that I'm happy to get into.
Well, what would be that better way? And I think people that would oppose your views would say, well, no, this is targeted to Chinese ownership, and it's more targeted to the Chinese Communist Party. And the companies that you just mentioned are U.S.-centric or Canadian-centric, and their servers are here, and we can kind of control, in a way, what they do.
Yeah, so a couple of things on that. It's a good point, but the text is actually four countries. It explicitly calls out China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran. And the phrase, again, there are several different categories, not to get into too detail, people can look it up, but one of them is you can just be a person or a website that's subject to the control of one of those countries. And that's why I kind of brought up the Trump thing in a tongue-in-cheek manner, because we had like a three-year investigation by an independent counsel going into the fact for the preposterous claim that he was under the influence of Putin. So I'm just saying these things could be abused politically. And I could see an attorney general doing something like that against Musk if they so felt like it. So that's just my response to, you know, the text of the bill. The better way is to look at how inert our Congress has been on the broader issue of social media. We know that TikTok, as abhorrent as they are, and that foreign ownership, all the big companies do this. All of them are tracking our data and misusing it, you know, Meta and so on and so forth. And in fact, if this does get sold, who's going to be the beneficiary? Some other big tech monopoly. So I'm not okay with that either, that's doing the same bad stuff. The entire social media apparatus in this country is governed by a law from 1996, to put in perspective how preposterous this is. 30 years ago, when you and I were around, unfortunately, they were trying to help companies like Prodigy take off. So they said, oh, we're going to give them protection under Section 230 for their content. Do you think that's appropriate now for companies that are the largest in our economy to have a legal liability shield? Get rid of it. Start using antitrust laws to break these guys up. start putting in the types of protection people want, an actual bill of rights around privacy to stop every company, not just TikTok, abusing our data. And then finally, in the great state of Florida that, you know, I'm a supporter of and where I live, we're going to look back at social media companies like we do about cigarettes, about how ubiquitous they are and how bad they are. Here, we've passed a law that banned children under the age of 14 from using them. That's another way to universally apply protections for kids against all social media companies, not just one.
We forget how new they are. It's like the car. The car came out. There was no rules. There was no lanes. There was no lights. And then it took decades to build all the rules out. And that's where we are. I think it's well said. By the way, I started law school in 99, Omid. We studied Section 230. Nobody knew what the hell was going on. We were all trying to figure it out then. Omid Malik, thank you very much. Appreciate your views. Strong, as always.
Great to see you. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Right up next, they love gold. By one country, we may have just mentioned, is suddenly buying up every ounce of gold they can find. All right, welcome back to Last Call. It is Sully's Stats Time. Something that sticks out to us here in the market, and now it's which country is making investors the most money so far this year? It's not the United States. And we can figure this out because there are ETFs for pretty much every populous nation in the world. You can buy them, trade it here. We checked the numbers today and found out the top five. Fifth best market, Colombia, up 9%. Fourth, our friends in Milan, Italy, up just under 10%. From there, we take a quick trip south and over the Ionian Sea, where Greece's ETF has risen just over 10%. This year, that's, by the way, just a touch under number two, with my peeps in Ireland doing pretty well. All these, by the way, outperforming the S&P 500 this year. But can you guess which nation in their ETF is number one? If you guess Turkey, you're right. Turkey's ETF is up just under 20% so far this year. Its domestic market is up even more than that. That is three times the gain on the S&P 500. You got high inflation, falling currency, might be pushing people to buy stocks. Turkey, number one in the U.S. or the world so far. And remember, it's Istanbul, not Constantinople. You can hit me up if you got that reference. All right, in the meantime, this is wild. Chinese buyers are boosting gold. Our friends at the Kobesi Letter pointing out that gold trading volume in China is now 400% larger than last year's average. Look at that on the far right. What a spike. Gold prices, by the way, are at a record high. Let's talk about this and maybe a little bit on NVIDIA. Joining us tonight, KKM Financial founder and CEO Jeff Kilberg, also a CNBC contributor. What do you make of this wild rush for gold in China, Jeff?
I think it's the parabolic move higher. So you continue to see people buying gold. If it's a retail play at Costco, people are buying up ours. Or if it's over in China, they're trading gold due to the fact that there's now volatility. But the central banks, they're not buying it to trade. So the central banks are buying it to hoard. They're trying to hedge political risks, geopolitical tensions, but also the fact that the dollar, remember, the U.S. is accumulating $1 trillion of debt every 100 days. So I think these central bankers are trying to buy it while everyone's trading and enjoying the price action.
All right, I want to switch gears and talk about NVIDIA. NVIDIA was $875 a share when you came on, I think it was in mid-early March, to talk about NVIDIA. And I'm going to refresh to Jeff Kilberg what Jeff Kilberg said.
I think Monday morning could be a rude awakening because if you look, Sully, technically, there's a gap all the way down to 625 where the 50-day moving average is, where it hasn't been in a long time.
Good call. Since then, Jeff, the stock has fallen 14%. I'm not a chartist, but when I look at the chart, it's about as attractive as three-day-old sushi. What do you think about NVIDIA now?
Well, Sully, I think I alluded to the NVIDIA nirvana, and I think we are seeing a pullback down nearly 20%. Off that all-time high up at 974. But I think this is a function of the reality. It was too much, too fast. If you just go back 2 years, we saw NVIDIA trading under $200. So it's been gapping up. It leapfrogged Amazon and Google just back in February to be the third largest company out there. So we talk on trading terms as a little vernacular here, but back and fill. All that means, Silly, is that all those price actions that you saw skipped on the way up from 200 to 970, it has to back and fill. So I think this is really healthy. I still love NVIDIA. I get it. But they're not the king of the hill anymore. You're seeing a ton of competition. So it does make sense for it to come back to 625. I didn't get a lot of love By the way, when I came on your show and said that, the NVIDIA lovers came out and threw some shade my way. But right here, right now, it seems like it's going to go lower, despite the fact that it's still lofty up at, you know, 750, 800.
Well, you called it. We'll see what happens. And I would say that NVIDIA Nirvana is not in bloom. Jeff Kilburg, thank you. Coming up, it is the mega IPO that investors have been waiting for. But is the moment actually near? Rare comments from the co-founder of Stripe next. Stripe is one of the biggest financial technology companies in the world. And the rumor mill is swirling about when it might go public. If it does, it could open the floodgates in a slowly thawing IPO market. The payments platform recently announcing an employee share sale deal, valuing Stripe at $65 billion. That's why we're talking about it, folks. It's big, bigger than you thought. Kate Rooney just sat down for a rare interview with the Stripe co-founder and president, John Collison, for the Developers Conference. And not only does he have a sweet, sweet accent, Kate, but the question everybody's asking is, when are they going to go public?
Brian, you and everyone in tech is wondering that. When is Stripe going to go public? The co-founder and president, John Collison, tells me they are in no rush. Stripe executives, he says, are more focused on giving employees opportunities to sell stock, which is what they just did with the tender offer. And while $65 billion, that might sound like a massive price tag, Stripe's peak valuation was actually $95 billion. So quite the haircut, thanks to higher interest rates, slamming growth companies. We've seen it in public markets, too. He said something that might surprise investors about interest rates. Collison said the zero interest rate era ending, despite what it did to Stripe's valuation, said that's a good thing.
I think broadly speaking, the effects of higher rates have been quite good, where the period where money was free was not a healthy time in Silicon Valley, because I think you basically had an overfunding of kind of marginally good ideas. They didn't even have to be bad ideas. They just kind of weren't the best ideas. So an overfunding of those.
Collison, who runs Stripe with his brother, Patrick Collison, agreed with Visa CEO's characterization this week of the consumer being stable. He said despite some of the doom and gloom in 2023, he said it was actually a robust growth year for Stripe with $1 trillion in payments volume. He says the GDP of the internet, as he calls it, keeps growing. Stripe is also the payment processor behind OpenAI. You might have heard that name. And Anthropic AI has been a massive theme of today's conference. He was pretty animated about this moment in tech right now.
We have this incredible pipeline of AI technology that has been invented that has not kind of been rolled out yet in a product usage. So I can't remember a time in Silicon Valley where it has felt like there is as much interesting kind of tech advances taking place.
Collison is not of the mind that robots are coming for our jobs, but he does think there will be massive increases in productivity, which might be something the Fed might pay attention to. He said it would make tech workers between 10 and 30% more efficient, Brian.
I've never seen John Collison before, and I'm getting a little bit of a 1985 Rick Schroeder vibe from whatever, but that's because I'm old. That said, I mean, if they do go public, is there like this cascading possible effect, Kate?
Yeah, Brian, they're really seen as the bellwether. When Stripe goes public, that is, you know, the floodgates opening, as you said. We had Rubrik today, which is a big software IPO folks were watching. I actually asked John Collison about that. I said, oh, what did you think about the Rubrik IPO? I mean, these private market companies, startup founders are so focused on the business. He really said, oh, I actually didn't really know that company was going public. They do not seem at all focused on an immediate IPO, which is interesting. I mean, so many of us, when we talk on CNBC, are talking about public markets. They're sort of a long-term growth company. It's been private for a long time, but it would be a massive signal to the rest of the market in tech, especially in fintech, if these guys go public and it's a successful IPO. Yeah. That would be really good news in Silicon Valley.
And finally put some food on the bankers' tables. Kate Rooney, yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, poor guys.
All right, yeah, let's get out of our quicker than the ticker. All the best of the rest of the headlines.
Let's put 60 seconds on the clock. Starting with a Sully side up.
The Biden administration announcing new rules for airlines, among them more transparency surrounding extra fees and for airlines to issue immediate cash refunds to you in certain situations, including cancellations and delayed bag returns. Oracle moving its headquarters to the Music City. Chairman Larry Ellison says the company is relocating to Nashville to be closer to companies in the healthcare industry. AI-powered cameras being installed on Los Angeles Metro buses. It's to help ticket cars illegally parked in bus lanes and to help improve bus ridership. Emerging cicadas so loud, people are calling the cops. A South Carolina sheriff's office just sent out a message alerting residents that the whining sounds are from the cicadas. Trillions of them now beginning to emerge across the Southeast and Midwest. Buckle up. Wild, wild horses. At least four people injured after military horses got loose during a routine exercise this morning. A British Army spokesperson says the horses are back and belong to the monarchy's household cavalry. Coming up, the people cashing in big time on scalping. Yep, scalping restaurant reservations to some of America's hottest eateries. The unbelievable numbers. Next.
Welcome back. It's RBI time, and let's talk money and travel because they go together, especially in some spots. The travel experts at Optimos Travel analyzed 100 popular vacation spots in America, and they ranked the most expensive spots to vacation. Here are the top five. Santa Monica, California, $592 per person per day. Montauk, New York, $614 per person per day. Maui, Hawaii, $682 per person per day, plus you got to get there. But it's the literal high life that's going to cost you because the top two are in the mountains. Park City, Utah sets you back $710 per person per day, but that's nothing. Because Aspen, Colorado will cost you, on average, $761 per day. Probably way more if you're skiing. And that means that's $3,000 per day for a family of four or over $21,000 for the week. A few honorable mentions in that pricey top 10. Key West, Charleston, South Carolina, and of course, right here, or right across the river in New York City. Meantime, sticking with expensive spending, we're calling this forked over, forked with an R. And if you're looking to go out for a nice dinner at a popular restaurant in your city, you may have noticed it's getting more difficult to get a reservation at the hotspots. Well, a new piece in The New Yorker claims that may be due to a new, very legal market that has popped up, where you can snatch up sought-after reservations and then sell them on a resale site for a premium, right? It's not the food. You're just getting the reservation and then selling it. One of these sites is called Appointment Trader, and it has restaurants from all over the world where you can go buy or bid on reservations for some very hot and popular spots. We were curious, so we decided to take a look for ourselves. You're in Malibu, California. And you want to dine at Nobu this Saturday night. Well, it's beautiful. It's right on the ocean. You can bid on a reservation, currently $300. Remember, that does not include food or drink or anything. That's just to get the reservation. In Miami Beach, a table for two tomorrow night at Rao's sets you back nearly $500. And if you're in New York City and you want a table at the coveted Carbone on a Friday night, you can pay up to $750 or more just to go there. Apparently, resellers are making big bucks doing this as a side hustle. And joining us now is the founder of Appointment Trader, Jonas Frey. Jonas, thanks for joining us. I knew things were getting crazy. I didn't realize they were getting like this. This is a hell of a market. How did you get into this?
Well, I couldn't get a DMV reservation. It wasn't a reservation, it was an appointment. I couldn't get a DMV appointment. There was a very long line. And I remember looking at the line as that it's crazy that I can't, like, I'm German and we're much more socialistic there, but I'm like, hey, I'm in the U.S. and I can't pay anyone for their spot. How is that possible?
And what did you find out? What has been like the weirdest or like the most surprising thing about this market?
Well, so when I started, I thought our average ticket was going to be $25, you know, for a time slot. And, you know, crazy enough, it actually, like, across the last 50,000 reservations, there was actually a little over 100 on average, which is pretty nuts thinking that, you know, every table or two, every, you know, not as busy time, it trades on average for over $100. That was, I think, the most surprising thing to me.
Yeah, we're showing on our screen. You probably have a screen there too. You can see it, Jonas, which is kind of that, you know, the live clock and the days and Carbone, which Carbone, by the way, is fantastic. And they do a great job. Thankfully, I've got friends that go there a lot, so I can just kind of tag along with them. How many restaurants are in this universe? Is it just like a couple of the super hot spots in a city, or is it starting to really broaden out?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about Carbone is, you know, those there are maybe four or five Carbones in the world that are always, all the time, oversold for, you know, many, many different reasons. One of them, they're being very good business people. I have to say that. But, you know, I found, so we have more than 400,000 restaurants listed on the site. And what I found is that about 5% of all time slots are oversold. So, you know, you'll have, you know, we're talking sit down restaurants, like nice sit down restaurants in the world. And what's very interesting, in the summertime, for instance, Paris and south of France, but also London and these type of destinations, they become super popular on the site, whereas they turn barely any revenue in the winter. So it's very seasonal also where people are traveling to and then trying to get in. But I wanted to say one thing about the high prices that you were showing.
Yeah. Quickly,
you know, our average ticket is $100. The thing, what we do well is,
yeah,
you know, 3 years ago, you would
Jonas, my man, I want to get you back on, but I got 10 seconds left in the show and I got a table at Carbone. I'm kidding. I don't. But if I needed one, I'm going to come to you. Thank you, Jonas. We'll get you back on. Fascinating stuff, folks. I mean, amazing. So are you. We'll see you tomorrow. Shark Tank is next.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.